And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Holly. In this episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Wolverhampton Wanderers at Molineux. On top of that, we'll have another edition of the Cottage Talk Roundtable. We also have scheduled a special guest, which I will share who that is once he has arrived. We have much to get through, but before we get going, I have to welcome my Cottage Talk co-host back to the show. David, how you doing?
Hi again, Russ. Hello, everyone. Not too bad. Spent the day watching David Bowie videos mostly, unfortunately. But
very sad.
What a great artist he was, though, and a unique talent.
Absolutely, Dave. Listen, I was telling you, we were messaging back and forth about this, and I saw him on the Glass Spider tour, right, not that far from where I live right now in Foxborough, and it was amazing. And that was in the mid '80s, and that was great to see. I've always been a fan of Bowie, and it was very sad to see the news today.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's. I don't think you expect these things to happen, and 69 is nothing these days in this age, and I guess he seemed immortal but that will be his legacy. He will be immortal, I think, now. He'll live on forever. You know, his music and the imagery that he created, it was a very unique style, very memorable, and he was obviously a very talented guy, and he seemed quite a down-to-earth guy as well, really. Obviously, sad news for everybody that enjoyed his music and his artistry.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, David. And I've actually been listening to a good amount of Bowie today, like many probably are doing. I would say my favorite Bowie song is probably Rebel Rebel. But I've been listening to some of the music in the 80s. But I can go back pretty far with Bowie as well. And he's a one of a kind, and he will be missed. He will be missed. All right, my friend, let's get into the show, and let's get into the Cottage Talk Roundtable while we wait for our guests to arrive. And let's start here. I talked about this with Mike yesterday, but I want to get your thoughts on this. Let's start here. What are your thoughts on the injury to Collier Woodrow and how it might affect a move away for Moussa Dembele? You know, again, there's been all this speculation surrounding him. What do you think about this injury, and do you think that affects him potentially leaving?
For much of the season, we've seen Woodrow has been a sub nearly all the time. He hasn't really figured a lot at all. So in terms of the status quo as we are now, it's a loss, I guess, but it's not the biggest blow. You know, Dembele's been the regular in the team, and he's been the regular goal scorer, whereas obviously Woodrow's hardly had a look in apart from a few cameos, and he's got a few goals in those, I must say. But, you know, he's been a regular person on the bench, but we have Matt Smith as well, of course. But obviously, if we were to lose Dembele, then, you know, we have a major issue, because it means literally we either have to change our system to be playing one up front, or, you know, we have a constant combination of Smith and McCormack as our only front two, really. Obviously, there are other people in the mix, and this could actually, you know, people like George Williams.
Adam Taggart.
We haven't talked about him much lately, but George Williams.
How about Adam Taggart, David?
Yeah, and Adam Taggart. But, you know, these guys who've sort of almost forgotten or just been on the sidelines, but I know George, I know we think of him as playing more in a wide role. I know he's also played kind of in a forward role before. And, you know, at this stage, he needs to get back to match fitness. He's physically fit, as far as I know, and he needs game time. So either the club will be looking to loan him out, but perhaps, you know, we might actually see more of George because he's got some versatility about him where he can play on either flank or as a striker as well. So, you know, that might be a factor. Adam Taggart, of course, as well. We haven't actually seen him ever in the first team yet, so that would be an interesting scenario. But,
yes.
You know, if Dembele was to leave, then I would imagine they would look to bring a striker in somehow on some sort of loan basis.
Probably, right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it would have to be on loan. I saw someone on Twitter today, there was one of these in-the-know people tweeted that Fulham are going to make a £2 million bid for someone from somewhere.
I saw that too, David.
Yeah, and it was met with loads of ridicule because obviously it shows that they don't know what they're talking about because of the fact that he's, you know, that we can't buy anyone in this window. So it was just ridiculous. But yeah. I think we certainly need to keep hold of Dembele. And I did listen to you and Mike yesterday, and I think in Mike's view was that we would keep Dembele regardless, even if it meant a financial loss at the end of the season, you know, on a potential sale price, rather than go down to a situation where we only have two recognised strikers. And I say recognised because obviously Tagger is completely untried and untested at this level, and otherwise you would be playing someone else there who perhaps isn't recognised. So I think it's, you know, it makes it much more likely that Dembele will stay till the end of the season, even if it means we lose him for less of a fee.
Right, right. And that's, you know, and that was a good point by Mike. And I just want to mention this about Adam Taggart, because some of our Australian friends have let me know that I believe he is on international duty with Australia. So, again, and I, David, I used the word that I said I told you I was not going to use today. So that is, I'm going to donate a pound for using AGAIN. I'm trying to eliminate that from the show. So I already owe a pound, and I'll tally that up at the end of the season. But talking about Taggart, I believe he is on international duty, but at some point he will be back, and hopefully we'll get that opportunity. But David, I just can't imagine that they would sell Dembele at this point.
No, I mean, it would be a really difficult situation, I think, to lose two strikers, I suppose. I mean, Woodrow will be back, but not for, you know, a couple of months or so, 3 months, I guess. And, you know, unless, of course, our friend Mr. Jokanović thinks that Matt Smith and McCormack are the solution to all our problems. And he hasn't tried that combination yet. But I know Mike will be pulling his hair out if he thinks that's probably where we're going to go with it. And it would be very limiting if that was our only option. As I say, we could have a system where you play one up front, maybe with McCormack, someone like and Kearney as a cam just playing off him. It's not that there aren't other options out there. It might be a chance in some ways to try a different system, to try, you know, we've said in the past, I mean, we actually expected this season almost to be playing like a 4-3-3 or 4-5-1 type
right.
scenario, because we'd seen it successful. Other teams had, you know, Derby principally, I think, and other teams have played that kind of system as well in the Championship and been successful. And we thought the days of 4-4-2 were over, but lo and behold, it's been 4-4-2 most of the season, apart from a few dalliances with, you know, the 3-5-2 and everything else. So, you know, there are other options out there, obviously, if we were to lose both of them. But I don't think it's a situation you want to be put in, really, as a coach. Not unless, of course, you know, he doesn't fancy either of them anyway as players. But I'm sure, you know, that would be a foolish thing, a foolish presumption to make, let's say, because I think Dembele is pretty highly rated and coveted by other teams, as we've seen. And I'm sure Jokanović knows that. Woodrow, we don't know. It's you know, he's never really had a consistent run. He has his fans. He has his knockers, like some players. But, you know, this season in the main, if you look at his ratio of playing time to goals, it's probably quite good, actually, because he hasn't played a lot. But, you know, he's come on a couple of times and got late goals, and then he's played, you know, the other week and got two goals. So his scoring ratio is probably quite good at the moment. So it's an option that we've lost, and I don't think we'll be keen on losing another one in Dembele. But we don't know, obviously, what the situation will be. If someone comes in with an offer of silly money, then it might not be in Jokanović's hands. And, you know, we may have to go with other options.
No, very interesting, David, and it's a really good discussion. I'm glad that we could talk about this, because I find it difficult that they would let him go until the summer, but you never know. Like you said, if it's a crazy offer, you have to consider it from a business end, business side of this. You have to look at it. But I want to ask you again. We're talking about this, and I want to bring in our opponent for this upcoming match because they just let a striker go, Benneke Fobe, to Bournemouth. What are your thoughts about them doing that so early in the window? I think that was a mistake.
Well, I would imagine that Wolves have ambition, like, you know, most teams, you know, to certainly a club of their kind of history and relative size, to the playoffs would be the minimum, you know, expectation for the season. Just like, you know, that's supposedly what our expectation was, to make the playoffs at least. And you know, and just like we've seen also with Reading, you know, getting rid of, you know, one of their star players, it is quite surprising to see these sort of things, unless the money is so good. But, you know, regardless of how good the money is, sometimes a player is actually worth more than that. Because
right.
it's about being able to replace them, you know, and you have someone who's a good fit for your club, good fit for the team. That's a good thing to have. It's a very valuable asset. So for Wolves, who are, you know, reasonably placed, I would say, in Fulham's case, you would say we have different targets. Our targets are not the playoffs. Our target is now ensuring we stay in this division. And I know we've had our moments talking about these things. I'm not saying we're going to be relegated, but our target is to make sure that doesn't happen. I think we can probably safely say that the playoffs are out. But for Wolves, I don't think that's unrealistic. I think the playoffs are more than in their reach if they were to put a run together. So, yeah, it's a surprising move, really. So either the guy really wanted to leave and the club felt he was unsettled and a bad influence, which I haven't seen, or that the offer, you know, that the money for them for some reason was so good. But I don't think in the relative state of things that it was a good move by them, no.
I agree with that, David. And listen, our guest is just holding on the line. I'm going to bring him on in just a second. But just to talk about this real quick, when I saw the move by Afobe, I was surprised because in Fulham's case, I would want them to have a replacement. Now they're looking for a replacement for Afobe. They're actually real hamstrung because they also have another striker out injured that won't feature against Fulham as well. So they are down two strikers in this upcoming match, which I find very interesting. And again, we'll preview that match, and that's another AGAIN. So that's 2 pounds already, David. But I think it was a mistake to do it without having a replacement first. And the money might have been real good, but I listened to the interview with Kenny Jackett earlier. He did mention that Afobe asked them this summer about a possible move and then asked them again. So it sounds like to me, I'm trying to read between the lines, that he might have been pushing it a little bit. But if I'm them, I would have waited until I found a replacement. But that's just me. If this was Fulham, I would be very angry. But this is Wolves. But again, that's part of the comparison here. I wouldn't have done it if I would rather get the player in first and then sell Afobe. But they didn't. Now they have to scramble and find a replacement. All right, David. It looks like our guest is on the line. I'm going to bring him on. And listen, we've been working very hard to bring him on to the show. Joining us now from Israel is Raphael Geller, who is a BBC World Football correspondent. Raphael is on to discuss the Fulham head coach. Raphael, welcome to Cottage Talk.
Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Doing good, Raphael. On the line with us is my co-host, David Holly.
Hi.
Hi,
greetings from England, Raphael. I have spoke to you on Twitter once or twice, so it's nice to have you on live in person.
Definitely. Happy to be.
Okay. Before we go any further, I have to ask you this because David and I have been going back and forth on how to say the Fulham head coach's last name. Can you try to clarify that for us?
Well, I think one of the problems is that in Serbian, in English, and in Hebrew, it's all pronounced differently. In Israel, people said Jokanovic with like J. I know that my friends in the Serbian press say Jokanovic. So I don't know. I'm not going to pretend that I know. In Israel, at the press conferences, we just said Flavisa, so I can tell you that.
Okay. Well, in both cases, David, it looks like you're right and I'm wrong.
No, well, I had a feeling it was something like Jokanović, but Russ thought it was Jokanović, but we weren't sure either, so we had a bit of fun going backwards and forwards with this. But, yeah, I think you've got the best idea, Rafael. Just call him Slavisa.
Slavisa, yeah, absolutely. All right, Rafael, the reason why we wanted to have you on was to discuss with you Slavisa and take us through the timeline of him having interest from Fulham and then obviously coming to Fulham. You know, again, you've been fantastic on Twitter during this whole time period. So talk to us what was going on in Israel at the time.
Well, listen, Slavisa, it's been very clear that he wanted to make the move back to England. One of the problems that was keeping up any deal with any team is that he was required to stay through the Champions League, which ended in the first week of December. Throughout, you know, in November, there was some interest from QPR, and Reading, and to be honest, a lot of clubs. But he really wasn't allowed to leave until after the Champions League for lots of reasons connected to his contract. And once Fulham made the approach, things got a bit tricky because, Maccabi Tel Aviv wanted the right price and Fulham wanted to make sure they didn't pay too much. Then there was some talk about how it was possible that maybe Maccabi would ask for him to take away his Champions League, I'm trying to think of the word, bonus, I think. But that hasn't been confirmed. Basically, there was a lot of back and forth, but it was very clear, that Slavisa wanted to go. In the past, he had made it clear in press conferences that he was staying at Maccabi Tel Aviv. When we asked him about being linked to other jobs, he said, "I'm happy here, I'm staying here." But once we started bringing up the Fulham position, we kind of heard uncertainty in him, and he was kind of unable to say, "No, I'm not going to Fulham." And he continued to kind of say it wouldn't be respectful to talk about it. And then, I guess, what was it, Saturday ago, basically everything got knocked up. He knew he was going, and he coached his last match on that Sunday. And as the second the match ended, he announced at the press conference that he was leaving. And 5 minutes after he announced that, the Fulham Twitter and social media and Instagram all announced that he was leaving. So from what I heard, it was done either Saturday night or Sunday morning, and he just was asked, as a respect, to stay and coach the team on Sunday. It was very clear that he wanted to go. A lot of people here ask me why. Why would he want to go to a team struggling in the bottom of the championship? And I think a lot of people aren't familiar. Most people are, but a lot of people don't realize that Fulham is a big club in London. He has a very big, passionate fan base. He's used to being in the Premier League. He's used to, having respectable seasons in the Premier League 5 years ago. We're in the Europa League final. I mean, you can't say that about QPR or Reading or Blackburn or all these other clubs that approach him. I mean, just a few years ago, Fulham was a respectable, top 10, top 12 team in the Premier League, and that was something that Slavisa couldn't say no to. Plus, Watford is very close to London, and he really, really enjoyed his time in Watford. So, to me, it was very clear from the beginning that he would go. The question was how he was going to let him go.
Okay, very good. And let's talk about the supporters of Maccabi Tel Aviv. How have they reacted to him leaving for Fulham?
To be fair, I think if a coach leaves you in the middle of the season and he has a contract, that it's understandable why the fans would be a little annoyed. I mean, there are a lot of fans very angry, didn't understand why he'd want to leave a team where he could compete for multiple titles, play in the Champions League again, possibly. But then there are a lot of people saying, if he doesn't want to be here, then he should go. Then there's the people who said, listen, he's got a better offer. He's a manager. Just like a player, when a player gets a better offer, even if he has a contract, he sometimes gets out of it. And that's the world of football and the world of sports. And at least he tried to do it in the most respectful way possible, which I think he did. But the fans are very bitter because, no one has left so far in the Jordi Cruyff era. All coaches have stayed. The coaches were just as high profile as him are relatively high profile, with Oscar Garcia and Paulo Sousa, Fiorentina, and Paco Estarán, who was Rafa Benitez's right-hand man at Valencia in Liverpool. All of those managers stayed the whole year, even though some of them got interest from other clubs. They stayed for their contract. So there's some anger. But Maccabi fans are over it. You know, there's a new manager here. Most of them wish, you know, a lot, I'd say 80 to 90% of them wish all the best to Slavica and wish him luck. Then there's always a small group that always has to be negative, but that's, you know, that's in every life. But the fans were disappointed at first, but it's now been, what, 10 days, I guess, and both clubs have now played a couple matches, and Maccabi's very happy with their new manager. And, you know, time has passed and people need to move on. And it worked out for the best for everyone. And I'm personally happy for Slavica. And, yeah.
Okay, very good there, Rafael. Let's talk about him as a coach. Let's start with his strengths. What have you witnessed with him at Maccabi Tel Aviv? Where do his strengths lie?
I think, you know, as I said, on the TalkSport interview, he's, you know, tactically wise and really having everything planned in his head, knowing the strengths of every team and having kind of a good scouting report. His staff is amazing. Very smart staff. Most of them, you know, 90% of them came to Fulham. Javier Pereira is his right-hand man, who you'll see making a lot of decisions and very involved in training. He's a very special manager. But I think what always stood out is how he always seemed to know what, you know, what to get from each player, what every player can do, what every player can't do, and he seemed to be able to get the most out of a lot of the players. Now, you know, I think one of the things that people didn't like about him here is that if he thought that you didn't fit into his system, he didn't even really give you a chance. It wasn't even about, you know, giving them a chance. He just said, sorry, you don't fit in my system. I'm not going to play you. And that happened with a very popular player here. But he just didn't fit into his kind of system. But, you know, after they beat Basel in the playoff round to make the Champions League, obviously the players are the guys on the pitch and they're responsible for the results. But you can't, you know, the way that he out-coached these managers, it was amazing. He basically got Victoria Pelsen manager sacked in the Czech Republic losing. And then in the playoff round, he really embarrassed the Basel manager, because Basel is a team that needs to be in the Champions League. They have a massive budget. They have great players. And it was a huge, huge, huge upset, the biggest upset of the playoff round, even more than Astana, I would say, that Maccabi Tel Aviv made the Champions League. And a lot of that credit goes to the manager for being prepared, knowing what to expect from other teams. Now when we get into more of the league, I'd say his strengths are that he is very tough player. I mean, he comes from the Balkan style where the practices are demanding. He is a friendly guy. I wouldn't say he's not friendly, but he's very tough, very demanding. He wants his players to work hard. Something else that we found interesting here is when he wanted, you know, to make a statement to players or the owner, he wasn't afraid to do it with the media, which is something that you don't always see with managers. Sometimes they don't like to say things to the media. They don't like to call out players' media. He did it. I thought it worked well. It did work well if you look at the results. And, you know, people in Israel weren't necessarily used to it, but it doesn't mean it's a bad thing. It's just his style. I think if you ask a lot of the Watford fans, and I spoke to a lot of them, he really is a guy who would fit more for the English style, more physical league as a manager. Where in Israel, I just think he kind of lost. I don't say he lost the interest, but the Champions League is the Champions League, and the Israel Premier League is the Israel Premier League. And I think he just didn't feel, I don't know if the word is ahead, but he wanted to really feel like he was competing. And in Israel, it's hard to feel that, because besides one team that's competing with Maccabi for the title, everyone else is just a way, way lower level. Yes, they might beat Maccabi occasionally, but it's just not, you know, as a manager, you want to say the best. And I think he knew going to the championship and getting faced you know, 20 teams that are, you know, have good budgets and have good fans, and it's what he wanted. Which goes to say, you know, did he make the mistake of coming here? And the answer is no, because he got to compete in the Champions League, which gave him a lot of exposure and gave him a lot of experience. So after the Champions League, he's the level of the Premier League in Israel and realized, you know, this isn't for him right now. And that's, you know, like I said, that makes sense why that would upset the fans. But the bottom is, he did what was best for him. Maccabi did what was best for them. Maccabi got a good amount of money, you know, 500,000 euro, that they ended up spending 300,000 to get the new manager. They have to buy out the new manager. So that's kind of the irony about this, is they did what Fulham did, they did to a club in Holland. They took their manager in the middle of the season. What goes around comes back around, as they say, and you know, yeah, both sides moved on and both sides are happy, and that's what matters. I think we were very lucky we got to see him here, and yeah.
Okay, very good. Before I hand you over to David, a question for you. You were talking about system. We've been talking a great deal about what formation is his favorite formation. Joshua Halfman mentioned that he did try to play 3-5-2 at one point. We want to see the 3-5-2. All of us on Cotter Talk, we talk about it all the time, but he has played different formations too already. He played a 4-3-3 and also played a 4-4-2 in the two matches so far. So does he have a favorite formation there, Rafael, or is it really just matching up against the opponent?
I wouldn't say he has a favorite formation, because he played several in Israel and he always was changing the starting 11. So, you know, I don't think any manager, excuse me, any journalist or fan who watched Slavisa would be able to give you an answer for that. I think that would be something I have to ask the Washington fans, because in Israel he had several formations. He had a Champions League formation, he had a formation against this team, and a formation against that team. Maccabi Tel Aviv doesn't have the level of, not players, but the level of strikers that Fulham does. They basically have an attacking midfielder who plays every role on the team, kind of like a Ronaldo type, except there's no Benzema, it's just Ronaldo. There's no striker on the team, and when there's no striker on the team, that gets formations to be very tricky. So I can't really give you, I like to give good answers, and that really is the best answer. I don't know. I don't know if he has a fair formation, because he sure didn't ever really, you know, he didn't go 10, 12 matches in a row with the same formation. So I hope, sorry, I have a better answer, but that's the truth.
Okay, very good. David, over to you.
Hi again. I mean, it's difficult to question you directly on these things, because you're not him, you're not inside his head, but a couple of things that you've seen in the last couple of matches, he's kind of, you know, there's things we have at Fulham that among the established fans we kind of think are red lines, and we've discovered it. Ross McCormack, our star striker, he should be played as a striker, but in his first game for some reason he played him left midfield, and it was really ineffective. And another guy, Alex Kakanicic, plays a lot better on the left than on the right, but he's played him twice on the right, and we're kind of scratching our heads and thinking, hold on, you know, why is he doing this? Is it because he can see something that we can't see? Or is it that he's come in and he just doesn't know anything and wants to try things out? Because I would imagine a man of his intelligence and professionalism would almost kind of know some of these unwritten rules, that you don't play him here and you don't play him there, or this system doesn't work for Fulham because they've been tested in the past and it hasn't worked for us. So I guess from my point of view, I'm expecting to see him try either something we haven't tried before, or to enhance the things that we have done before and to make them work better. I don't know if that makes sense to you, Rafael.
No, absolutely makes sense. You know, I think that happened also here a couple of times. My guess would be that this is basically his mindset, and I'd be curious to hear if you agree. I think he realizes, you know, the team is in danger of going down, just being on the standing side. And I think he's coming there to kind of share him for next year, because I think for him, and I'm guessing the owners told him, you know, Felisa, do whatever you do this year to make sure we don't get relegated. and then build our team to next year. Because it's important to say that when he left in Israel, he kept saying multiple times how he wasn't going to Fulham for, you know, months or a year. He wanted to go there and build something special and build a team. So I think this year he's kind of just testing things out, testing his players, seeing, you know, like you said, maybe this player should hear and everyone's scratching their head, but maybe he's trying something else. As long as he doesn't get relegated, I think that's the most important thing, because I think he needs to bring in his own players. He needs to bring in his own style. It's very difficult to do, 20-plus, 25 games into the season. And, I know maybe Fulham fans wanted me to say that, you know, he's come there to get you to a miraculous playoff push and hope that you can maybe get promoted. But I think that's a little naive to say. I think he's there to get them, you know, stable, make sure you don't relegate it, finish in the middle of the table. Obviously, if you have a nice run, then go for it. But that shouldn't really be the goal. I think the goal should be to have kind of build a team that he wants to see. Make sure you don't get relegated, and then build next year to try and be promoted or make the playoffs. Because, you know, coming in and expecting this overnight change is not, you know, what people say, sometimes you have to do it in the long run, not the short run. Maybe in the short run, it'd be the best for him to kind of follow what the previous managers did in terms of tactics or where a player plays. But he, I think, wants to come in and do everything from scratch, you know, see where he thinks the player should belong, make sure that he doesn't get relegated, and then next year completely go for it. Because I don't think you could say this year, you know, Fulham is going to try and make the playoffs. Again, as a fan who pays a lot of money to see the players, that's what you want to hear. But you also have to be realistic. And realism is there's some very good teams in the championship. It's gone to watch a lot of championship because of Brighton, and some of the best players on Brighton are Israeli. So I've gone to watch a lot of Brighton. It's a very good league. And I think you need to give it time, you know, judge him a year from now. Not in May, you know, if the club finishes in 18th place. I don't think you can judge him on that. I hope now I'm making sense of what I'm saying regarding the players. I just think it's going to take time. And when I say time, I don't mean a month or 2 months. I mean, you know, maybe 6 months, 8 months. Let's see what I was in the transfer window this summer. You know, fans need to be very patient. This isn't his team. He just came over from a completely different league. That also needs to be important. You know, he didn't come from Germany to second. He didn't come from Spain or Italy. He came from Israel, where the style is completely different. The level of play is not even a quarter to the level of play there. And he just needs some time to get back in. And I'm confident that when, you know, if you give him 6 months to 8 months, and you look at the club maybe next November, December, I think you'll be in a much better position. And you just got to kind of roll with it now, support the team as much as you can, and hope that he's the man who's going to bring you back to the Premier League and bring you back to the glory days.
No, I agree. I think even the most optimistic fans would say now that the playoffs are out of reach. It's going to take something remarkable to get there. Whilst many people obviously are concerned about the threat of relegation, so that has to be the number one target, just to stabilise now. And it's going to be a long-term plan, I agree with you. Long-term is very difficult in this day and age because owners and fans are very impatient, of course. But this season is about stability. Summer is about probably bringing in players that he feels we need because, you know, I've been very critical and I think, you know, we have a lot of weaknesses in a squad and I think we need to augment our squad in places. And I'm sure he'll make that decision as well based upon what he finds out. So, yeah, we've got this season to stabilise, next season at the earliest to go for it, really, because we can't just go out and spend millions in the summer, otherwise we'll be embargoed again under the financial fair play rules. So we can't just put all our money in and say, right, let's go for it. It's going to have to be a very hard process, and next season could almost be too soon as well. It takes time to build these teams up. So I take your point. So let's hope that he's in it for the long run, that things go the right way so that the fans and the owner remain patient and keep faith in him, because we need some sort of stability. The last few years, we've chopped and changed managers. And you can see clearly it hasn't worked for us. Either they haven't got the right person in, or they've made the change too early, too late, and then they've been chasing around their own backsides, basically, afterwards, trying to make up for those mistakes. So, no, I agree with you completely, Rafael.
I think also, like you said, we're living in a time where managers are getting sacked all the time. You know, you look at Gary Monk at Swansea, and there's so many different examples where it's not really like their time to go, but the fans are putting so much pressure and there's so much money being spent that fans are getting impatient. But at the end of the day, you have to kind of take a deep breath and realize they need to give things some time. So this isn't his squad. No one on this team is the players he necessarily brought in. Obviously, there's some very good attacking players, very young, experienced attacking players. But, you know, you need more than that in a football team to succeed. And I'd be very curious to see who he brings in this summer, you know, whether he tries to go to his roots and maybe bring in some players from the Balkans, or whether he listens to the English management who can help bring in players from the championship. But you just, you know, you need to give it time. I know it's tough because people pay a lot of money to go to games. And, you know, when you're a club like Fulham, you know, what's the point to go to a game just to root that your team doesn't get relegated? But that's where that's where they are now. It's almost February, you know, 2 or 3 weeks away from February. The season will be over in May. And then, you know, the season's over, then it's really his time to build the team and, you know, next year, for sure, go for the playoffs. I mean, with the type of history you have and fans and obvious money that you have from your own, obviously you can't overspend, but, you know, Fulham Football Club should be competing to get back in the Premier League. Obviously, a lot of things happened wrong this year, but I think next year you'll be there. And you know what, if by February of next year you're in the same position with him, then you can maybe, you know, sack him or talk, but the fans just need to give him support, give him time. You know, what he did at Watford is not going to happen at Fulham. You know, he came in October after a million managers were there and got them up that same year. That's not going to happen this year. But he is a very, very good manager, and I think he'll do a very good job. I just think he needs some time, and I think, you know, the fans need to be patient. I've already seen on Twitter a lot of fans angry at the results, you know, the losses, but just need to give it some time.
Okay, very good. Listen, Rafael, thank you so much for joining us. You've been with us for almost a half hour. I really want to thank you for your time, and I'm glad that we can make this happen.
Yeah, definitely. I enjoyed it. I have a little soft spot for you guys now. Brian's my team right now because of our Israelis, Tomer Chemed and Baram Keal. And I'm here on my number one team on the championship. But you guys are definitely my number two team.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much, Rafael. David, do you have anything else you want to say before we go?
No, just thanks for coming on, Rafael, and hope we'll speak to you again soon.
Yeah, anytime. Just let me know.
Thanks, Rafael.
See you guys later.
Okay. Cheers, my friend. Okay, that was Rafael Geller, who David was pretty much with us for almost a half an hour. He's a BBC World Correspondent in Israel, and we had a very good conversation, and I apologize for some of the issues we have with his line. Again, he's calling from Israel on Skype, so we did have some problems hearing him at times, but I think we got the gist of what he was trying to say, David. What were your thoughts about our conversation?
The voice of reason, the voice of common sense, you know, voice of patience. I know I'm terribly impatient when it comes to new managers and new players.
Did he make sense, David?
I make snap judgment, but I know we have to be patient. And I know this season is about consolidation now. I know you don't like me saying that we have to make sure we avoid relegation, but that's what we have to do, because I don't think there's any way we can do anything else apart from make sure we stay in this league. Anything better than that is just impossible. And so it's about the rest of this season, familiarisation with the league, with the players we have, summer to make acquisitions. I mean, maybe, you never know, we might get someone in on loan now in January. They don't seem to be rushing themselves, but we might get someone in on loan in January. It may turn into a permanent transfer, who knows, but the summer really is where it's going to happen. And I think, you know, potentially there could be quite a big clear out or turnover. You know, maybe more out than in, I don't know. But that will, and then next season is really, you know, from day one is when we have to judge him from. Let's see some early shoots of recovery from, you know, this season, hopefully, and then next season all systems go. And this is, you know, and a real attempt. I'm not saying we're going to do it next season, but I think a real attempt at going for at least the playoffs next season. This season's target must be next season's target, I think, to have a go at the playoffs as a target. Otherwise, you're just kind of treading water. And I think Rafael, you know, say he's talked a lot of sense, and he's kind of backed up our early impressions that Jokanović is a, you know, an intelligent and thoughtful manager who's going to be working very hard, and perhaps his style will be suited to Fulham's situation, our, you know, the league we're in, the country we're in, the type of football that's played. So it sounds quite positive. So, you know, we can't think anything else but be positive. We've had two defeats, but, you know, he has to have time. As I said on my last time I was on, I think it was, whenever, you know, Roy Hodgson didn't win a game for several weeks, and he turned out to be a superstar. So, you know, let's give Jokanović all the support we can at this stage.
Absolutely, David. And it has been clarified, it's Jokanović. That's how I'm going to be saying it from now on. I've been wrong this entire time. And, David, you've been right, so credit to you and everyone else. I've been saying it wrong, but now I will say it right. It is Slavisa Jokanović. So we've cleared that up. I'm glad we got that done. But, David, very interesting conversation with him. And, you know, I see where he's going on this. We need to be patient. But one of the things I got out of it, David, and it also goes back to what Joshua Halickman, the sports rabbi, said to us when he was on. A big plus is him bringing in those two guys with him, his staff with him, because he really is a tactician, and they are going to be working hard to get the most out of his players. That's also something that we got out of our conversation that Rafael shared. He's going to try to get the best out of what a player can do, and that to me is very important, and put the players in the best position to succeed, hopefully. Well, you have brought up a very good point, playing like Kaká in a position where we think is wrong for him. Let's see him evaluate Kaká. Maybe he makes a move. Again, that's number three, David. I just did it. So now I owe 3 pounds. But we'll see exactly where he evaluates all these players. But I find it very interesting that Jokanović is really this guy who's going to break down his team and hopefully build it back up. All right, David, very good, very good. You ready for our preview of Wolves?
Yeah, that's fine, yeah.
Okay, while I go through our preview, feel free to jump off, you know, as I just share some information, and then we'll get going. Sound good, David?
Yeah, that's fine, yeah.
Okay, very good. All right, let's start here with the basics with them. Wolverhampton Wanderers are currently 11th. They have 9 wins, 7 draws, 9 losses. They've scored 32. They've given up 32. They are on 34 points. Fulham are currently 19th. We have 6 wins, 9 draws, 10 losses. We've scored 40. We've given up 43, and we are on a -3 goal differential, which is interesting because we're not that far off from what they are. And but the point differential, again, they're on 34 and we're on 27. And David, I'm already up to 4 pounds. Okay.
Again.
And to answer your question, we do only have an hour. I saw your message there. All right. All right, David, I'll go through, give you some basic information. First thing I do want to mention is that Benneka Fobi has gone to Bournemouth, like we talked about it in the very beginning. Kenny Jackett, in his interview as a preview for this match, said that Bjorn Sigurdsson got injured in the West Ham match and will not play against Fulham, but who knows, we've seen that change. But reportedly he will not be, so they are down 2 strikers for this match. Here are some team characteristics for you. Their strengths: attacking down the wings, aerial duels, defending set pieces. Their weaknesses: defending against long shots, protecting the lead, avoiding fouling in dangerous areas. Their style: they play with width, attempt crosses often, playing in their own half, and they're non-aggressive. And I could see that on many of the videos that I watched, and they do allow their opponents to have the majority of the possession, at least of the videos I've seen and the stats I've seen. So that's pretty consistent. Top-rated players are this goalkeeper, Emiliano Martinez, Danny Bath as your center back, and Kevin McDonald, who Fulham were rumored to over the summer as your central midfielder. Their leading scorer was Ben Akinfobi, but he's no longer with them. He had 9 goals. James Henry is their second leading goal scorer at 5, and Dave Edwards has 4. All right. And that basically gives you some information on them. David, again, all this information comes from whoscored.com, and I said A-G-A-I-N again. That's number 5, so I owe 5 pounds already. That is crazy. All right, David, who are your key players tomorrow for Fulham?
Well, the thing that kind of made me raise a smile there was when you said that one of Wolves' weaknesses was defending against long shots. I was thinking, well, that's probably not going to be a problem with Fulham at the moment, because we like to try and walk the ball into the area and things. So, strengths and heading ability sounds like, something they're pretty good at. I mean, previously when, we've played them, obviously, they've lost a few of their key players over the last season or something, but they used to be very strong on the wings, on both wings, really, both putting crosses in and also cutting inside with pace and power and shooting. So I think it needs to be set up really like we were on Saturday. Although we let in 2 goals, I think defensively we were better as a unit. We were certainly better as a unit on Saturday at Wednesday than we were when we played them previously in the season, obviously, because that's when we, were conceding crosses and, headers from crosses. We didn't at least concede any headers from crosses this time. So I think, for me, the key players, it's kind of a team thing again. Maybe it's going to be another sort of 2 banks of 4 scenario, getting behind the ball. Because, Wolves are going to be happy to give us possession, from their trends. They don't mind giving possession. Obviously, Fulham are quite happy to have the possession, but, previously we haven't always been, useful with it. I mean, we out-possessed Sheffield Wednesday on Saturday, or both Saturdays. We had less possession proportionally this Saturday, but we actually were better with the ball than we were the previous Saturday when we had all that possession and didn't do a lot with it. So I think it's about whoever he's going to play, and I think it's the 2 banks of 4 are the key players for me, really. They've got to do a shutout job, and we've got to be effective on the break. And I don't know if you'd say it was on the break on Saturday, but because we were actually putting him under sort of pressure for longer spells. It wasn't just like a random sortie forward. We actually did have I think especially second half, a good spell where we were putting a lot of pressure on them. But Wolves is a difficult place to go again. And, as I said to you, I think yesterday, if you were looking at it from a betting perspective, you'd probably say this was a home banker, really, based on our form. Our current form especially, and also, of course, Wolves' position. So, for me, I'm not going to pick out one player. I'm going to say it's going to be a unit thing, and especially our midfield and our defence, to really shut Wolves down, stop them playing, and then to enable us to perhaps go at them. And if by chance we can get a goal and get our noses in front, then perhaps we can put in the classic away performance that I think you were talking about yesterday with Mike, because we've been set up better for away performances. Perhaps at home we've played more like the away team, if anything.
That's right.
So I think that's where we need to be going. I don't expect there to be anything too cavalier. I don't expect him to go in an all-out attacking scenario tomorrow. I think I think a cautious approach will be what we want to see. So it really depends on who he picks in what positions, and that's going to be the interesting thing. The 4-4-2 worked for him better on Saturday than it did than the 4-3-3 or whatever it was, the 4-1-4-1 the week before. But obviously there's going to be a couple of changes in personnel, though these shouldn't affect too much the scenario. But I'll come to that when I give you the team anyway.
Okay, David. I'm going to give you a key player for a different reason. Preparation. I'm going to say Richard Stearman. Richard Stearman is a former Wolves player. And I have a funny feeling he has been important getting Slavica ready for this match, knowing how they play. So I'm going to say an important player before the match is even played could possibly be Richard Stearman, but also during the match, you're talking about two banks of four. I think he's going to have a very good game for Fulham to get something out of it. All right, David, what do Fulham need to do to win the match? It sounds like you're talking about basically beating them on the counter.
Well, maybe not as sort of black and white as that. I don't think we should be sitting back the whole time, but I think a cautious approach, you know, and playing it on the ground, you know, using the space, creating your own spaces, movement, but, you know, not just hoofing the ball forward and hoping. You know, certainly, like we saw at Sheffield Wednesday on Saturday, we saw some promising spells, some promising moves forward, attacking thrust. I just think that needs a bit of tweaking, and we need to be more ruthless, obviously, in front of the goal when we get there, which is an obvious thing. Because if we had been on Saturday, we'd still be in the FA Cup. So, yeah, just a cautious approach, making sure we start the match strongly, don't concede early goals. And I think the longer the match goes, the more Wolves would become frustrated and perhaps may start taking chances. And then that's, you know, at any point, we've got to take an opportunity to try and get our noses in front. And then we really can put them under pressure if we do the right things, if we are stronger and more organised. You know, just like Sheffield Wednesday did to us at home.
Yeah.
Get a goal from somewhere. And then, I know we're probably the worst team in the world for talking about holding onto a 1-0 league. A 1-0 lead, I should say. But, you know, that's where we need to be at. This is,
I totally agree with
you. We can't win every game scoring lots of goals. We need to develop this toughness.
Yeah.
I think this is what Jokanović will be, something he'll be looking to do, develop a toughness. And sometimes you have to grind out these matches. And, you know, I hope I'm wrong, but I see from Fuller's point of view, to win it, it will be a fairly low-scoring affair. If we don't do the right things, Wolves could easily put two or three past us.
Sure. And you are right about that, David. I'm not against them grinding it out because, like you mentioned, we need to be tougher. And I think it would be a good sign if they could actually pull that off. It'll be interesting to see if they can, but we'll see how this all plays out. All right, David, we have a little over 6 minutes left. Give me your starting 11. We don't know what Slavica is going to do. What would you do?
Well, I'd change it all around and pick a 3-5-2. You know me. I'd throw caution to the wind. I'd put a new system in and try and play everyone in the positions I think they should be playing in. But, you know, the more sensible thing is to ask me what you think Slavica would do, isn't it? I don't know.
Okay. Okay. What do you think he'll do?
Well, I think he'll stick with a 4-4-2 because, in the main, it went quite well on Saturday. I know we lost, but, you know, we've seen the highlights, we've seen the stats. It was a game we could have done and should have probably won. So I imagine he's going to keep Lonergan in goal. The back four, he'll have to change Garby, I believe, because I think he got injured. So I expect he'll just bring Tim Ream back in at left back. I would assume he would bring in, he'll bring Stearman back in for his knowledge. It's not a given, though, because he may feel that Hutchinson and Byrne did well. But most likely he will bring Stearman back in, and it'll probably be Hutchinson who pays the price for that. Our old friend Jazz Richards, I'm sure, will stay at right back. Saying that, you know, I'll give him credit. He actually put a good cross in 2 weeks running now.
He did.
So maybe he's been listening to the show and all our complaints about him not getting forward enough. Because I know for Wales he's done it sometimes, so perhaps he's got it in him and it's, for some reason it's been repressed. So yeah, Richards, Stearman, Byrne and Ream as a back four, I would imagine, with Lonergan in goal. And now this is where it's crucial for me, because you know, Ream isn't going to get forward for us really at all. This is where, if he's going to keep Kakanicic in the team, he's got to play him on the left. You know, we need some option on that side. But I don't know. Will he keep Kakanicic in the team? This is the interesting, interesting point. I don't know. I really don't know. I would either, you know, maybe think about giving Pringle a go, or, you know, is he going to change it around and do something else? I don't know. Centre midfield, I think we need to see O'Hara. He had a good game on Saturday. And probably, if he's fit to resume, Hyman to come back in there. I'm not sure if I would fancy Kearney being in centre midfield against them. They've got a good central midfield with McDonald. So I think Kearney will have to go back out to the flank, much as we don't really like it.
Sure.
He's probably less dangerous out there in a way, if you know what I mean. He can come in and create, but we're less relying on him through the middle. So I think Hyman and O'Hara in the middle for me. Could be Kearney on the right. Could be Pringle or Kak on the left. Or perhaps, you know, I think this would probably be a more sensible solution in this case. Maybe start with Kearney on the left and keep LVC on the right. LVC's, you know, it's not an ideal position
for
him.
He can play over there. It's just not his strength, David.
But I think it's better. It would give us perhaps a slightly more stronger midfield. And I think on the left he's a bit wasted, LVC, because, you know, he's not a left-footed player, really. And he's not going to give us any width at all if he's playing in front of Tim Ream. Kearney would potentially give you a little bit more width there, but we're still going to be fairly narrow with those four, but that might actually make us stronger. Then up front, of course, it was going to have to be Dembele and McCormack. Obviously, we know Woodrow's not playing. I don't think he's going to bring Smith in at this stage. If you were going to have Smith in, you'd probably, you know, a different formation, maybe wide people are going to be getting crosses in a bit more. So I think the 4-4-2 and something along those lines with those players. But say if it was me, I'd still be tempted to go the 3-5-2. But we don't know about Fredericks, where Fredericks is, whether he's injured or whether he's just, at the moment, just not getting a chance, which is
sure.
It's a bit concerning if you know, because Rafael said about, you know, the in taking Slavanić, Djokanovic taking a dislike to players and them not figuring. I hope that isn't the case with anyone at Fulham, Fredericks or anyone else, because obviously it's very early days to be making such big judgments. So,
sure.
Yeah, hopefully so. That's the case, and I've gone on long enough, haven't I?
Yes, because we only have about a minute and a half left, so I have to do this quickly. I put up a poll on the Cotter's Talk Twitter page, 75 votes, lost 38%, draw 23%. David, win? 39%. Very interesting. What is your prediction?
I'm afraid I still think that it's going to be a tough game for us. Prove me wrong, Fulham, but I think we're going to go down 2-0 or something like that.
Okay. My prediction is prove David Holly wrong. 2-1 to Fulham. That's my prediction. I have a good feeling they are missing a key player that they just recently sold, and they're missing another striker. I think that's very significant. And I think we could take advantage of that. And I also like the fact that Richard Stearman knows this team, and I think he could be very important in this match before the match is played. So I could be wrong. I've been wrong plenty of times, but I'm going 2-1 to Fulham. David, great show. Thank you very much, my friend.
No, thanks again, Russ, and I look forward to doing the show with you next time, whenever that is.
Okay, very good. Before we go, just want to thank Raphael Geller for joining us all the way from Israel. He was fantastic. For David Holly, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, David.
Cheers. Bye-bye.